You're listening to Elevate, the official podcast of Elite Agent Magazine for real estate industry sales professionals, property managers and leaders. Each episode, we bring you behind-the-scenes coaching, news analysis, exclusive interviews, technology and more to help you list more, sell more and elevate your results. To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe. Here is your host, Samantha McLean.
Hey, Samantha McLean from Elite Agent Magazine. This week on the Weekly Wrap, we once again welcome two of our Transform 2018 coaches, real estate coach Josh Pyatt and sales/NLP expert Charmaine Keegan of Smarter Selling. This was a pretty interesting session where we discussed the top dollar productive activities that are perhaps least enjoyed by agents, namely door knocking and cold calling. But with a few tips from these two, you might actually feel pretty good about your next prospecting session. All right, so welcome, Josh.
Thanks, Sam.
And welcome, Charmaine.
Hi, Sam. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. So you guys have been a couple of our most popular Transform coaches this year, and with good reason, because Josh, you talked about dollar productive activities, and Charmaine, you talked about building rapport, and both of those things together, that's what real estate's all about, really, is being able to build relationships and also to manage your time. So what we want to do today, I guess, is go through and put two and two together and talk about some of the things that you talked about. So let's go with you, Josh. So first of all, dollar productive activities. You split them into three camps. What are some of the things that you talked about with the Transformers?
Okay, so I guess the first dollar productive activity for me is, you know, obtaining data of owners, clean data, in order to build your database. I think that, you know, any business, whether you're a real estate agent or you've got, you know, a supermarket or you're a technology company, like companies and businesses and individuals, the more data they've got of their customers and their clients, the more powerful they're going to be. Because the more data you've got in terms of email addresses and names and numbers and all that, then you can market to these people and build relationships. Yeah, and get to know these people, build relationships with them. To answer your question, like the first dollar productive activity is actually obtaining data of our clients and the people that own properties in our marketplace.
Yeah.
One of the other things is obviously prospecting. You know, prospecting is like the backbone to a real estate agent's business. If we don't prospect, then we're not going to be creating any opportunities for ourselves. And then there's a whole heap of other dollar productive activities like...
within that, yeah.
So you've got, you know, obtaining data of owners in your area, prospecting, and actually booking appointments to get into doors. So like market appraisals, you know, if we're not getting into doors, then we're not going to be doing any business at all.
Yeah, absolutely. So... on top of that, Charmaine, tell us about the basics of building rapport that you went through with the Transformers. Like, what are some of the things that you need to do to build rapport quickly with people? Because often in real estate, you don't have a long time.
Yes. I think one of the main things of building rapport is you've got to come from a place of honesty. And so it comes down to your mindset. So your mindset thinking, I'm here to help this person. I'm here to help this person sell. I'm here to help this person buy. And if you anchor your mindset in that every single day and be a model of excellence to yourself and go, you know, I'm here to help people, to help their lives be better, be more enriched, whatever your measurement is that comes through your head. But if you start from there, then you naturally smile, you naturally stand up straight. And all these things, when we tend to think of rapport, we tend to think of the last bit, which is actually meeting somebody and getting on with them. But really what happens psychologically happens a few steps before that. And that is how you feel about yourself, how you feel about the job that you do, how you feel about the day. What's your state of mind? Are you thinking, wow, how can I help this person today? I can't wait to come in and meet Mr. Smith today because I'm really going to help him sell his property. And if you think like that, then everything in your body language, your tone, your tonality, how you look, how you speak, how you show an interest in them is going to come through because you start from a genuine desire of, you know, I'm here to help you. So all those things, Sam, sort of come before knocking the door or seeing them, because then when that happens, you're naturally smiling and you're naturally... you're giving off thousands and thousands of signals every moment. And if you're giving off those signals of I'm here to help you, it's going to show in everything that you do and how you behave. And so they pick up on that. So immediately when someone gets on with somebody, they start to match and mirror them unconsciously. So if you're smiling and you feel great about yourself and you feel great about the fact you're there to assist them, then you're going to be smiling, standing straight, and you're going to be open, open-hearted. And I mean that by literally your body language rather than be sort of, you know, a closed door, which, you know, no one wants their client to be closed because that means, you know, batten down the hatches, no money. You want them to be open and open to your suggestions and open to how you can assist them. So if you're showing that and you get on with them by a big smile and hi, how you doing, they're going to immediately pick up on that and match you back.
Mm.
So that's going to be for 99.9% of the time that people automatically get on with you just by the sheer manner and tone that you come in with your eyes open and a big smile and a genuine, hi, place looks great, really looking forward to this conversation with you. That is going to come out in everything that you do and they will match that immediately.
So, Josh, let's talk about calling, because we talked about calling in the Transform session quite a bit, and you don't like cold calling, do you? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, you're right. I don't like it. I think cold calls are the hardest types of calls to make, and I find that agents have the least success with it. You know, if you look at the majority of agents, they've got warmer types of people to call. So, you know, typically cold calls are going to be landline numbers and people that we've had, either individuals or the office, have had no interaction with. I find that, you know, most agents and offices have far warmer types of people to call. So, you know, buyers that have come through open homes in the last 6, 12 months, maybe even from 5 or 10 years ago, I guess that's some sort of level of interaction.
Yep.
And a mobile number, which we can play off the back of. You know, you've come through an open house with us a few years ago, just wanted to touch base and see, you know, if you ended up buying or if there's anything we can help with, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas cold calls, I find that you've got very low percentage in terms of getting data, getting emails and mobiles out of them, booking appointments. It's a very hard type of call to make and actually to have success with.
Yeah. So given that cold calling is so hard, Charmaine, you're not traditionally of the real estate space. You consulted to big corporates and you're very used to this whole term of cold calling or, you know, some sort of calling. How do you recommend people build rapport quickly over the phone when you've got 5 seconds?
Yeah, look, that's really a great question. If I could just tap into something that Josh just said, though, first of all, if you don't have a list and you're starting out, I think you need to embrace calling and go at it from a place of what's the worst they can do, right? What's the worst they can do? They can go, you know, you're fat, hang up, whatever, right? That's the worst they could do, right? So first of all, if you've got nobody to call up, you need to stop calling, not coming from a sort of, oh, no, cold. Maybe just call it prospecting. No, it's not cold call anymore. You're walking past places. You're on your way to an open. You're going there early, but, oh, look at this. So-and-so is just doing their garden up. They've suddenly spent a lot of money on this house. I wonder if they're going to do it up to sell. And guess what? If you turn up as the friendly person that you are, knock on the door, go, hey, just what a great job you're doing. I was just wondering, are you potentially looking to sell this? Or whatever the lines are that you use internally, then I think that's when you're going to get a lot of success because you start to build that relationship with somebody. So first of all, I think we need to change the word from cold calling to warm calling, as Josh mentioned, or even prospective.
Well, there's one of the coaches that actually calls it genius zone. I think it's Claudio says he changed it from prospecting through to profit zone and now it's evolved into genius zone.
I love it. I love it. Change the mindset on it. But secondly, just going on what Josh said, you know, if you've got people that sold 3 years ago, bought 3 years ago, 10 years ago, and you've got people that came to an open house, then they're your first energy versus outcome, right? So you want to put your energy and effort where the biggest outcome is going to be. So you're better off having 200 of them to call, of course, than you are 200 people that you don't know from Adam, because you're going to get more success with that. So I think for a first step, you've got to really plan your territory well and plan your day well. And I think to start your day off, because it's all about mindset, start yourself off with some easy wins. I think you need to start off with easy wins. So people that have come through the weekend, nice big smile, get the first person in the door, but start with some easy wins of people that clearly are out to move or looking to buy in the area or whatever it happens to be. Going back to your question, Sam, which is how do you build rapport quickly in the first few seconds, we see if they've been in to one of your homes at the weekend, then you've got that instant recognition and something you can say. Now, if you were smart enough, and it wasn't, of course you always want to be busy at the open homes, but let's say you had a chance to write down some notes about people that came in, then you want a winner, because you can just go, hi Jack, you know, this is Josh, you came in on Thursday afternoon at Walker Street, you and your wife and your little dog was outside, and you know, I was there and I'd just love to know what you felt about the property or how I can help you. Again, you're coming in from that place of, I'm here to help you. By the way, I'm just here. That's all. And I'm here to help you. And so you've got an instant rapport because you're mentioning something that you did together. You're anchoring their mindset back on what you did. And if you're able to write a few notes, and I haven't got a good memory, so I make lots of notes on people, then
I've
I
noticed.
Have. Yeah, and I, as I'm sitting here today with lots of notes, but it means I haven't got to then hold it in my brain when I'm talking. I can then refer to notes. But if, obviously, if you're making calls, no one's going to see the notes that you've got, and you can just look at those notes and just mention, oh, you mentioned before this was a third house that you'd seen, and you mentioned you can look at a few that afternoon, and you've got something to hook onto, and you sort of, you know, it's interesting when you come into somebody showing that people think you've got a care factor, and all you're really doing is you're remembering. But it deepens that relationship between you and them when you can hook back to, and I'm going to mention now, positive experiences. So if they've come and they didn't like something, it's a given that we don't remind them of things that they didn't like. You want to anchor them on something positive that happens. If the kid happened to hurt itself in the fence at the back, you wouldn't be mentioning that. You know, I know it's quite obvious, but like, you know, we go, oh, you know, you'd be anchoring on the positive. Remember you mentioned the sunlight in the afternoon, how amazing that was because your last, you know, the house you're in currently is so dark. And if you know that's the biggest selling point for them, obviously you're going to tap into what's the biggest selling point of that property for that individual, which isn't the same as the next 30 you're going to call because everybody's got different things that they care about. So I think in terms of your question, what's the quickest way? Mention something that happened, go back to your notes, lift them with your energy, make sure you're sitting tall, maybe even standing, so you come across as positive and congruent and excited, and they'll pick up on that and they'll be just as excited.
What's the biggest mistake you can make when trying to build rapport over the phone with people?
What I find, Sam, is a lot of agents make it about themselves very, very quickly. And particularly with cold calls, what you've got to do is you've got to make it all about the customer and provide value and relevant information to them in that first 10, 15, 20 seconds. Because, again, cold calls, people want to know who's calling, why they're calling, and what it has to do with them, what relevance it has to do with them, and how they can benefit from the call. If they can't answer those questions in the first 10, 15, 20 seconds, they're going to zone out, they're going to disengage. So you've got to be, like you said, Charmaine, you've got to be high in energy, you've got to be excited from the get-go, because if you're not excited, then they're not going to be excited and they're going to likely to disengage. So you've got to give them relevant information, something that's going to benefit them in that first 10, 15, 20 seconds. Otherwise, there's a good chance you're going to lose them really quickly.
And I think some pitfalls are they feel that they're one in many that you're calling because of your tone that you're going in with. You know yourself if you've had bad cold calls that have come through to you from other businesses, Sam in here. I know that I'm one of many because the tone's the same. They've talked too fast. They're talking at me about their thing, not about me. I frequently have to ask them to repeat who they are and where they're calling from. And I feel like I'm one, I'm one in a hundred that they're calling that day, and I don't feel particularly special or that it's about me. So going back to what you said, all I care about is if you're calling me is what's in this for me? What's in this for me? And we don't mean crazy high energy because you're going to match the person that came in, and you might even have notes about that because if they're sort of a more quieter type, you don't want to go in like, off their head, you know. So, but what I'm saying, you've got to, I think, be normal. I think be normal with your voice, be normal with your tone. If you're not used to making those calls, practice, because if you don't practice, if you haven't been it for years and years and you don't practice, you'll speed up. And you want to come across as being cool, calm and collected, right? When they're on the phone, if you're cool, calm and collected, reasonable, rational and sensible, they're going to think that you're trustworthy and reliable. And when you have a tone like that, people tend to have a lot of confidence. They can feel that. If you're speaking faster, it tends to show that you're not so confident in what you have to say and that you've got to make loads of calls to get through. I'm really sorry I bothered you. And that will all come out because you feel like you're interrupting them. So let's, again, take a few steps back. Never say, is this a good time? I know it sounds awful, it doesn't mean you're going to go bombarding in or this will only take a minute, because the impression it gives them is I am disturbing you to my game, not your game, and I'm really sorry. And you don't want to come in from a humbling below them, so you want to come in from
a... As equals.
Equal. You've got to come in as equal energy. Look, I'm here to help you, and that'll come across in your tonality, in how you ask, and you go, hi, Samantha, you were in on Saturday, we had a chat in the afternoon, you mentioned you got that cat, and you know, I'm really keen to see if I can assist you with this property or any others in the area. And you're going to come in with that partnership in your head of, I physically think to myself, I'm standing next to them, looking at what they're looking at, thinking, how can I help you, as opposed to being opposite them, like an opponent selling at somebody stuff that they don't want. So coming from that partnership. And so speak slow, be in charge of your mindset, be 110% congruent. You can help them, and that will come across in your tone and your pace. And if you're not used to it, then practice so that you do come across as being cool, calm, reasonable and rational.
Some people say that you should stand up when you're calling people. Is there any truth to that sort of energy?
Look, I think that depends on how you sit, how you stand, and if your voice is different. In a psychological game, when it comes to reading somebody psychologically, if you're trying to get the upper hand, you'd want to have a seat that's higher than them. Sam, I noticed that your seat's a bit higher than mine today. So you've got the power in this room, right? Me and Josh are the same. But the reality is that equally, if you're trying to be more humble than them, if you think you're going to go and see somebody and he, because of the type of personality you want to come across as being slightly more humble, you may choose a lower chair. So there's things you can do which sort of show.
I've heard that works with kids, actually, for any of you parents out there, you know, instead of, you know, standing over your kids. Like, yeah. I've heard that if you're having an argument with your children, you should definitely sit down.
Be at the same level. Yeah. While you're shouting at them. Yeah. Give them a wooden spoon. That helps. But I think the important thing you're trying to come across in 99.9% cases, though, it is neutral.
Yeah.
You know, this is a mutual gain for both of you. You're helping them and they're helping you, right? So it's just you're both getting something out of it. So I think standing up sometimes helps because people then breathe better and their shoulders are back and they project more confidence. And you see, as you can tell my voice, if I'm like this, I'm crouched down, there's not so much air. But already if I sit up, it changes.
Mm.
It changes, even if I wasn't trying to make it change, it does change.
Yeah.
So what you've got to do is work out your behaviour. And in my old office, I used to stand and walk a lot of the phone, and you'll see a lot of agents actually around walking.
I do, I see that stuff. A lot.
Yeah, because they feel more, it's the energy, it's a flow. You know, you don't want to be stagnant when you're calling somebody. You want to have a flow to the conversation, a flow to the energy.
Yeah.
And if you're walking around, then that can help because you're already in that rhythm of a flow.
Yeah, interesting. So speaking of walking around, like we also talked about door knocking.
Yep.
Some agents don't particularly like door knocking, but it's something that you and some of the clients that you coach swear by, right? So tell us a bit more about why you see door knocking as so essential.
Yeah, okay. So the power in door knocking is, I mean, there's cold calling versus door knocking, and they're essentially the same thing. One's just cold calling, the other's cold door knocking. That's the reality. The difference between the two is it's very easy for someone to hang up on the phone, whereas it's a lot harder for someone to slam the door shut on you. Like, people just feel extra rude by slamming the door shut on you, but it's very easy. They don't really care if they just hang up the phone and say, look, I've got to go by. So I think that I've never met or worked with a really, really good agent that does a lot of business that hasn't done a lot of door knocking in their career. And the reason for that is it's a great way to get your name out there, great way for exposure. A lot of agents will sit behind on a telephone at their desk and just cold call all day, and that's okay, but think about it from the customer's point of view. It's like, if I've had all like 10 agents in the last month cold call me and I've only had one turn up to my front door, then who's going to become most memorable? You know, the guy or the girl that turned up on my front door. And particularly for new agents, a great way to get your name and your brand out there is facial recognition. Because in a day where a lot of agents cold call and make a lot of phone calls, and again, that's good, but for a point of difference, I think that door knocking will always have its place.
What are your thoughts on door knocking, Charlene?
Well, we have a mantra in pretty much every workshop that we have, and that is FaceTime equals more business. If you want a way to turn your business around, get out there and see more people. It's just a no-brainer. It's just a simple equation. If I send out an email, which I did on Friday, it's a mass email. I'd like to say there's millions on my mailing list, but there isn't. But I know, you know, I'll have whatever, 0.1%. If I send a personalised email, well, that's 1,000 times better than that, right? Because it's about that person. I'll probably get a response, probably about 60% of the chance I'll get a response, but it's still via email. It's still two-dimensional, right? The moment you turn up, the depth of relationship is in second to none.
Yeah.
So if we want to get a piece of business for our business, and when we're teaching others to get bigger, so if you can turn up, turn up. And I have before said to me, oh, you know what? I've got an appointment this afternoon in that area. I'll call in. You know, it's easy because I know if I can get in front of somebody, I've got that piece of business.
Yeah.
Whereas if not, it's on the phone. You know, you think about your body language, which comes across, and we teach NLP, right? So you see about what comes across in terms of what's happened unconsciously. When it's just the phone, yes, they can also hang up because they don't feel that level of engagement with somebody, right? But when you're there in front of them, you can show your manners at the front door. You can give them loads of space. You can step back. You can point to things in the garden. You can refer to what a beautiful day is and change the state of everything. You can mention something. You can smile. And you can talk with your body language before saying anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can wave to their kid, oh, what a beautiful dog, and go, hi, look, I was just passing by. And that it happens in your mannerism before you've even said anything. So your whole body language is really leading the way with the door knocking, and it's second to none. Also, on what Josh said, which I thought was quite clever, is I think if somebody has door knocked, I want to have an agent who's going to work harder for me. This guy that's knocking on my door, who's obviously hungry.
Rather than someone behind the desk.
Yeah, and I want a hungry. If I want someone to sell my property, I want someone who's hungry, right? Yep. So I might have called up 10 places, but if somebody's knocked on my door and come around and said, hey, I think, yeah, you're going to work for it. You're going to be hungry. And that's what I want to see if I was going to sell. So on every single level, it's going to be better than a phone call. And a phone call is always going to be better than leaving a voicemail. And that's always going to be better than doing an email.
Yeah.
Personalised email. And that's always going to be better than a mass email. So it goes up and up and up. Actually, there's one more in there. Let's just start from the bottom again. Mass email, personalised email. Then I'd say a phone call. Above a phone call, we do a lot of Zoom in our office or Skype or something like that. Then you get to see them.
Eye contact,
yeah. Yeah, eye contact. If you can't get to wherever that region is, for some reason they're maybe overseas or something. And then above that, getting out there and seeing them face to face. It's not even close to a phone call.
What I guess, coach agents with, I'd rather them knock on 30 doors a day and meet 15 or 20 people a day face-to-face on their front doorstep rather than an agent have 50 conversations on the phone through a cold call, because I'm all about quality over quantity. And I feel that, again, if you have 50 conversations on the phone through a cold call, how many of those conversations are actually going to be good quality? Whereas pretty much every conversation you have on a front doorstep, it's going to be far more powerful and better quality than a cold call. Mm. So door knocking, like I said before, will always have its place in this industry.
So to summarise that, you're better off going out there and door knocking, and don't be scared, because if you knock on 30 doors and get invited in 5 times, then that's better than sitting behind the desk and being invited in 0 times, which is very likely if you're sitting behind a desk. And secondly, Charmaine, if you do knock on the door, like, the attitude, of course, is I'm going to help you rather than I'm going to sell something to you. So we're back to Zig Ziglar, right? Stop mm-hmm. selling, start helping.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now let's go to the third stage, which is we're invited in. The owner's pouring the tea.
Yep.
And we're about to get into either a listing presentation or an appraisal situation, or well, even a face-to-face open home, because these days that's a great way to build your database, right, is correct, through an open home. So what are some of your tips with your real estate coach hat on,
yep,
of how to win over the vendor in an appraisal situation?
Okay, so I'll just clarify that. So for me, there's two types of appointments with owners. There's an appraisal where it's, for me, it's just like a price update or a relationship building meeting where they're not thinking of selling. And then there's your listing presentation or listing appointment, whatever you want to call it, where they're actually ready to list their property, select an agent, go on the market, etc. Let's talk about, I guess, the listing presentation where they're ready to select an agent and sell their property. Mm-hmm. For me, it all starts the minute I walk in the door. I like to be high energy, full of excitement, and just like you said, Charmaine, before, ready to help them, you know, help them and just give them the right advice. And what I do, I always ask for a tour from the very, very start.
Yeah.
And I always say the difference between getting a good price and a premium price can sometimes come down to the way a home's presented. So as I'm walking around, do you mind if I just maybe take a couple of notes of things that might need a little touch up, and then I can get my handyman to give you a free quote? And 9 times out of 10, they'll always say, you know what, yeah, that's a good idea.
Ah, so that's clever. That's your being their agent before they've selected an agent.
Correct. I'm thinking about presentation from the minute I walk through the door, and I actually explain to them that the difference between getting a good price or a really, really great price can sometimes be the difference between an average presented home and a really well-presented home.
Mm-hmm.
So I make it known, and then I start the service process. Like, I've got a handyman, his name's Chris. You know, I'll put you guys in touch. He'll come around, give you a free quote, et cetera, et cetera. So then as I'm going around, you know, I'm taking notes, and, you know, I even go as far as opening and closing doors, just like, you know, holding the door and just going back and forth a few inches. And owners have said to me, Josh, what are you doing? And I'm just like, well, hey, I just want to make sure that the door doesn't squeak, because when buyers come through, if they hear a squeak, then they're going to think, well, what else is wrong with the home? How much money do I have to pump into it?
Hmm.
Right. So I want to eliminate these negative thoughts from buyers. I want to make sure it's all done before we go to market.
Interesting.
Yeah.
What do you think of that one, Charmaine?
So is this when they're about to list, or is this an appointment where they're going to definitely list their property?
Correct. So this is the appointment where they're interviewing 2, 3, 5 agents, right, whatever it is, and, you know, I'm one of those agents, and I'm going through and I'm talking about why me, the strategy, the process, my commission, my marketing at that very meeting.
Yeah.
So when I'm getting the tour of the home.
Great. So what I think to myself when I do any sort of meeting with somebody is, I expand on what we've just said there. I think to myself, okay, they're going to see 2 or 3 people. What do they want out of this? what's a model of excellence of something that's going to help them? And then in my head, I roll those things. So rather than coming from our place, from our office, walking out in our, driving our car, going there from our eyeballs, I forget that and I stand in their shoes. And I think, okay, what's the scenario here? Okay, is it a quick sale? Is there six people involved? Is it going to be this? Is it going to be that? Are they going to have to sell it on to the husband or the grandmother? Or, you know, what are their challenges? What have they told me before? What information do I have? And start to come in from that place. Because that leads me on to saying reading the scenario really quickly. So that if you know, then you know if you can open the doors or not. Or if you know that they're going to think, what the hell are you doing? And maybe be put off by that. So reading the scenario really well. I think what they're mainly there to do when they're looking at different agents is they're weighing up trust. And I think that's a key word for most. And under the sort of umbrella of trust, it could be professionalism, how you portray yourself, whether you take your shoes off the front door, how you've introduced yourself, if you've got eye contact with them, their, whoever else is involved, their partner, their kids. There's a whole gamut of detail under trust, but we don't know how they measure trust because we all measure trust differently. So coming down to the rapport thing and bringing the NLP stuff to share with you, every single person measures trust differently. And what you're looking to do is every single thing they say, Sam, is intel. So if they had some chit-chat with you before on the phone or you happened to be there and they said, yeah, come back. And most people, including agents, think the chit-chat's just a bit of that, you know, the stuff just, between, you know, the real meat
the, potatoes. The weather and everyone's health. Yeah.
But actually what they're telling you in all that chit-chat is exactly how to sell to them, right? So if they mention their hair, I go, oh, I've just had it done. I'm not saying you suggest things that aren't correct at the time. But if they go, yeah, I love this particular hairdresser, I would say something like, oh, why is that? Because the next sentence they tell you is how they measure trust. Because she always texts me the day of our appointment. Because, you know what, she always is early. That person will repeat back to you exactly the reason they go to buy that service.
Mm-hmm.
And most people, you know, if you took 20,000 people in Sydney right now, there'd be none that measure that. But if somebody says to me, if I walk in, they've just bought a car, I'm like, cha-ching, all the lemons. This means they're literally now about to tell me exactly how to sell to them. Because I'll go, oh, why'd you go to that garage? Well, you know what that garage did? He shook by their hands, he looked in the eye and goes, how can I help you today, madam? And I think that's exactly what I need to do. And then they'll say, da-da-da. And they will tell you why they like that person over that person. Hmm. So in any phone calls with them, with any previous meetings with them, anything they say when you first get there, don't think this is just the in-between stuff before we get to the Wednesday house and the market. Because actually every single thing they say and how they act and how they behave and their words need to match their actions is actually giving you intel. Mm. And it's all these things that build rapport. So you might think, for example, they've gone with Agent A because Agent A offered a better price. That's rubbish. They've gone with Agent A because they probably couldn't even write down the reasons why, but maybe that Agent A actually spoke to their children politely when they walked in and the other agents just didn't.
Yeah.
Maybe that Agent A, when they walked in the front door, said to each other, oh, let's just close the thing and took their shoes off and the other agents didn't. Maybe Agent A, when they left before text to say, thanks, that was great meeting you and your partner. I look forward to seeing you again on Friday week. And the other agents didn't, because it's all these little things that build up to actually why somebody likes somebody over somebody else. But if you ask them, they probably wouldn't even know why, because it's so many little signals. And people tend to think, oh, it's down to the price. And it's never. It's never that, Sam. It's never the price. It's due to a thousand other things, most of which are so unconscious. So what you're trying to do is, first of all, step in their shoes. What do they care about? As you walk in, eyeballs open, see the pictures they've got, see what they care about, really treat everybody with a level of respect. Even if they keep their shoes in their home, take your shoes off, or whatever. Think about the general things that can make or break a relationship, and then try and get them talking as much as possible. Because in building trust, the more that they talk about their home, the more you will understand them.
Mm.
And what you're seeking to do as an agent is understand them, understand why they're selling, what motivates them, things, but also understand how they tick. And they might have all this little chit-chat, like, oh, well, yeah, we've just done the, you know, because they might have just done something that you might accidentally knock, right? So we're very careful, and I've seen this happen where somebody's gone, oh, you may want to have a look. I'm not saying Josh, you would do this because, I mean, you're a smart guy, obviously. But,
thank you.
You know, you may want to look at your front garden. We can get somebody onto that and thinking they're being helpful, but they may have just done their front garden, right, and think it looks wonderful. So people can also mess up through rapport. Oh, I'll just chit-chat about things. You know, I've had people say to me before, Sam, in workshops, oh, I see you're expecting again. You know, not wearing that dress again. So people think, oh, rapport is all about having a little chit-chat. Well, it's not really. Rapport is showing them that they can trust you. And the main way is smiling, letting them smile back and go, hey, walk me through your home. Walk me through what you love about the home. Take me through why you bought the home. And the more they talk, the more you're going to really understand them as a person. And when you deliver back how you can help them and you do the great things that Josh just mentioned about, I can get someone here to help and all the chat about a great price and a really great price, then they trust you by then because now you can really refine it and tie it back to things that they care about.
Mm.
And I think that's the key thing, making it about them and letting them do as much talking as you can.
Mm. Mm. I think that's a really interesting point that you just made there about listening to what their decision-making process is for other goods and services, because often that is just small talk, chit-chat, you know, like getting your hair done or whatever it happens to be. But then that leaves some big clues as to how they're going to make
everything,
every decision.
Everything. So I'm telling you now, if you know how to do someone's buying strategy, they're convinced the strategy and the motivational strategy, which I can tell in somebody in less than a minute, then you can sell anything to them from a packet of gum to a house because the way they make their decision is identical for everything. Yeah. So if a person says to you, for example, oh, yeah, we're weighing up three agents, for example, and you're agent number one, you know they're going to see two others, right? But it means you might better take those two others out by giving them two or three options yourself of different ways to go. So you're fulfilling their strategy of going, I can do that, that or that. If the third agent is running late or they don't turn up, you're actually already fulfilling that, oh, I've got different options here. So all the little chit-chat they say is basically telling you, this is how I buy. This is how I get convinced. This is how I read professionalism. This is how I like this. This is how I like that. So my local agent recently, I dropped in and I said to them, I'm just interested in putting my house on the market. But as I got in my car, Federico texted me to say, thanks for dropping in, Charmaine. I'm looking forward to seeing you in Mount on Saturday at 4 o'clock. I got home that evening. He'd left a note to say, other properties similar to yours in the area for the last 2 months. And when he walked in, they took their shoes off. He introduced himself and his partner that was there as well and why they were both there. And he asked some, I'm not going to share all his tips, but he asked some questions that separate him from the pack. Let's just say it's your questions and your interest and desire in helping that person that's going to separate you. His first three questions just put him in a different league to anybody else. And he continued to wow us from that moment on. And he just stood alone in the way he interacted. So although he wasn't selling us and talking about his prices at all, everything was selling it because he was come across as a trusted advisor.
Mm.
You know, that's how he came across. If I thought, well, I've got to trust a guy, it's him.
So would you say that if you do go to sell your house that he's the man in your mind?
Do you know what? This is it. And I think anybody else now has to compare against that person. So if you're the number one agent in, you set the league, you set the standard, and you've got that beautiful opportunity to guide them. And then when they see other people, they're now measuring them against what you did. And that's quite hard. But equally, don't be put off if you're number two or number three, because most people would go in and do the same stuff. So if you can just go in and make it all about them and go, hey, how can we help you? We're here for you. What would you like from us? How can we assist you? You know, because you don't know how much research they've done. You don't know if they looked at loads of houses or not looked at houses or looked at prices or not looked at prices, or you don't know what's going on, you know, in their head. But I think never come loaded with your own thing if they're not going to spend money or they're not going to, because that's rubbish. Okay. Never come loaded with that.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So this is my last question for you both, actually, that you just touched on there, Charmaine, is that we don't all get out of bed every day of our lives. Well, I mean, I do, but, you know, like singing from the top of our lungs, feeling wonderful and ready to get out there in the world. Like sometimes life happens to us, as incredible as that sounds, and we kind of don't feel like shoulders back, head up kind of day. So if you're in that frame of mind, how do you change your state to manage to be over there with the customer, to be in that frame of mind, to drop whatever it is you're thinking, feeling, doing, and be over there to help them?
Right. This is very interesting. So we're obsessed with mindset. And first of all,
this industry is obsessed with mindset.
And this industry is obsessed with mindset, you know, which is great. So because it's the measurement of whether you're going to succeed or not. It's all going on, what's going on in your head, right? Not your prices or anything else. It's all the houses you happen to got. It's nothing to do with that. It's your mindset. So first of all, recognising like you just have that we can sometimes wake up like that. Now, I've got three children, Sam under eight, and although I'm in positive states, I've got all the skills from NLP, hypnotherapy and timeline therapy to change my state. once every 2 weeks, I drop off the kids at school, and at 2 minutes past nine, if you saw me walking out the school, I could glass the next person that I see, right? What's happened in the last hour and a half would put anybody off having children in our household. In a surefire way to not want to have children, just turn up and look at what's just happened.
Three boys under eight.
Right.
Okay.
Wanted a girl. Just get going for a girl, Sam.
Yeah.
Right. Talk third one, I'm sure he knows that. But, you know, basically I could take somebody out, and I'm a really,
You're a nice passive person. Yeah. Right?
So we all have our methods. My husband has his method. He has to go to yoga immediately afterwards if he does the drop-offs. I sit in the car and I do certain breathing and stuff like that. But first of all, you need to be aware that you don't have to drag that negative energy around with you all day. You can't think, oh, I peak in the afternoon, or I drop in the afternoon, or today's a bad day. Don't label it like that anymore, right? Because your words come before your actions. So you've got to make sure you go, well, actually, I'm in charge of how I feel. And so how can I, this is a good word to use, how can I reframe my thinking? So a clear reframe that I run all the time, which is, if this is really the biggest problem I have, I'm a pretty damn good wicket here. There's a sentence I saw, when if you threw your problem in a hat, you wrote your problem down, threw it in a hat, and people around the world threw theirs in the hat, you'd soon grab your own problem back. So I think, you know, we're in Australia, or wherever we are, we're in this beautiful country, like, I wake up all day grateful because there's sunlight, and I grew up in England. So my starting block off the grid is already in a place of gratitude. And if we came from a war-torn country, you'd be thinking, you know, you'd be working on the underground here thinking how lucky you were, because your reframe of life would be different. But we can all reframe ourselves. We can all do things for charities or work for people that can't help themselves or everything, and you know, help people with the homeless and stuff like that. And suddenly you go, well, you know what? That could have been me. I could have pulled a different straw and that could have been me. So first of all, how lucky I am. If this is the biggest problem I've got today because somebody was rude to me or they hung up on me, well, really, you know, it's all character building. You stretch your comfort zone, never shrinks back. That's it. Move on. So think of your own reframes that you can do, and you can do that within seconds to yourself. So that's the first thing that I do, have a reframe. Yep. The second thing I do is think about happy clients. So now I want to anchor myself in, I'm here to help people. The last person who said, thanks so much, shook my hand and said, thanks for helping us, or thanks for helping us buy that property, or thanks for helping us sell that property. And, you know, feel it, you know, see it, hear them say it. Picture the environment when it happened, smell the smells and feel the feelings. And you could do all of those things, reframe and do that within less than a minute, and you'll change your state immediately, because your brain and your mind will immediately change your physiology, and it flows quickly. So you don't need an hour to get over it. It can happen in, you know, but definitely keep away from negative people in the office.
Yeah.
Because it can bring you down. Negative energy vibrates differently. And if you're a negative person, don't go in the office and don't bring other people down. You know, do them a favour, but more importantly, do yourself a favour and sort that language out and change it.
There's an expression that negative people have a problem for every solution.
It's true. Yeah. But if you happen to be that person that day, you need to recognise it and not go in and be the rotten apple, because you can bring people down.
Yeah.
You need to be a person who picks people up. And as you've mentioned earlier, when people are happy coming towards you, you become happy. If you're in rapport, they match your mirror. And you can change all that in less than a minute. I'm not okay till I've had two coffees. Just stop all the language. Just stop these limiting beliefs we give ourselves and just go, I can change my state in less than a minute. Right now I could be living in so-and-so country with this and no money, and look where I am.
Mm.
My job involves driving around all day, knocking on doors and smiling with people. Wow, what a great job.
It's not cleaning toilets, right?
You know, well, yes, of course. You know, it's not a million other jobs that would be awful. What a great job, and we choose to be in this job. It's free choice. We've come here willingly, and actually it's a wonderful job, and frankly, it's then very well paid when you do it well. And it's down to the energy and effort you put in. Is how you get paid. So I think that reframing and then step into a really positive scenario that you run in your head. Keep emails from people that say thank you, but definitely keep them in your head so you can quickly go, yeah, I have to help people. This is a great job. And then, wow, you're out there again.
Yeah. So any last tips from you, Josh?
Yeah. Let's not forget that, you know, real estate is well and truly a numbers game. It's also a quality game. It's no good doing a whole heap of numbers and speaking to a whole heap of people if you haven't got quality behind you.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say, get good at your dialogue, how you build relationships with people, how you establish rapport, because if you can do good numbers with quality, then you're going to be a great agent.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about you, Charmaine? What's your big takeaway from today?
For rapport, the reality is FaceTime equals more business, and just get out there, see more people, have a different depth of relationship with them, and that relationship will last a lot longer because they've seen you. So get out there more.
Fantastic. So thank you, Josh.
Thanks, Sam.
And thank you, Charmaine. We've loved having you. Please come back again soon.
Thanks, Sam.
To subscribe to the magazine, visit eliteagent.com.au/subscribe.